Governor Cuomo has something called his Energy Highway. We are anticipating a large turnout, and we would love for as many people to come as possible.
So large a turnout that you had to change the venue, apparently, for this meeting.
This group was formed around the start of the year, end of last year, called the Hudson Valley Smart Energy Coalition.
That if you're going to do all of that, the first thing that you need to do is demonstrate to us that it's actually necessary, that there really is no need.
This is Community Power, a monthly series of reports on the governor's energy highway, the popular resistance that it inspired, and the cultural resources survey of Livingston.
Start at the bottom and you pick them from the ground, and you pick that tree clean all the way around. Then you set up your ladder and you climb up high, and you're looking through the leaves at the clear blue sky. Hey ho, make sure.
So, shifting focus to electricity a little bit. I was kind of wondering about the history of electricity in Livingston. So when did folks in Livingston first have electric service?
That was in 1950 when they first hit the switch. So Livingston.
This was a huge event. I mean, this would have been a huge event for a town. Imagine showing up for this ceremonial switch flipping event.
It was
where
great.
There's lights on in the town hall for the first time.
Right.
And we still have original lights on the pole that were lit when the first one for our town streetlights.
Now, but before then, some people did have their own power locally generated, yeah?
Yeah, I can speak for our own farm. Our farm was bought by my family in 1915, and around that time, many of the local farms, if you wanted electricity, which was a newfangled thing at that time, you're tired of hand pumping your water and things like that, then it was on you to install a powerhouse. And these were often tool shed-sized buildings. You can still see them. Lots of people use them as sheds today, where there would be a small-scale residential generator, and you hooked up the wires to that particular facility and ran your farm off of it. And that was the way farms kept the lights on until the rural electricity program, the electrification program, took off in what mostly the 40s and 50s. So, you know, when we see all these images of dazzling lights in New York City in 1905 and things like that, you have to remember that it took another half century before little rural places identical to Livingston all over the country shared in that electricity.
Right.
Well into the World War II era,
yes.
For many farmers particularly.
And when the switch was flipped in 1950, where was the power coming from that was being transmitted now to Livingston? Was it locally generated, or was it
intermediate sources? So tell them about the place on Bingham's Mill Road.
Well, on Bingham's Mill Road, there was a small powerhouse, they called it a powerhouse, and it was all done with water. I'm not really exactly sure about how it all went down or where the wires, you know, came from, but if you go to the Bingham's Mills and on County Route 9, or State Route 9 and Bingham's Mills, there's a little power station to the left of that where we have our boxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think that was part of it. Mm-hmm. I believe that's where the wires came from the river, or came from the Rojan, and came all the way up to there. It was like a switching station, more or less.
Across from Blue Store Restaurant?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or the Explosor restaurant?
Yes.
Right. Interesting.
The first large-scale transmission towers that were built in Livingston are the ones that went through my farm. Those were, that route was constructed in the 1930s. So we just told you the first switch went on in Livingston around 1950 at the town hall. Some farmers were lighting their places in the 30s and 40s. But it's interesting that those first transmission lines in the 30s were completely bypassing all of the rural communities. They were bringing in probably the first hydropower stations in Niagara Falls region,
right.
Maybe some of the first powered plants upstate,
and were
bypassing this right to the city.
Yeah,
and I believe that that's why they called it Niagara Mohawk, because it came generated from
originally
Niagara,
from the falls, the hydroelectric
falls,
plant,
all mm-hmm. the way, or wherever we needed to go.
Right, and then in the between the 30s and 50s, they put a second larger line that goes through the west side of Livingston. And Livingston has the dishonorable mention of having two large transmission routes, both from the east and the west, converging into our town. We have that over the other towns in Columbia County, I'm afraid to say.
Lucky us.
Lucky us.
Okay. So do you know anything about the process of, you know, how those lines, when they went in, you know, how what was the process like in deciding, you know, where they would go? And, you know, was there the kind of community involvement in deciding the thing? Was there the kind of reaction at the time that we saw with the latest proposal?
I don't really know for sure, but I believe that because it was electricity, it was coming from, I have some paperwork that I'm trying to visualize what it was, but something power and water, power and light.
The New York Electric Power and Light Corporation.
That's it. And, but I think people would have been pretty much happy to see, you know, I can get an electric dishwasher or washing machine instead of using, you know, scrub boards. And
I think Joe's nailed it. I think people in that era fell into two camps: those that thought it was great because it was progress, and others that were just resigned to it because, I mean, my grandfather, he's not alive today, but my grandfather was probably the last man born in Burden, the town we just talked about. 1902, my grandfather was born in a world without electricity. He grew up in a land without transmission lines and all these other accoutrements of modernity.
Yeah.
So for him, this stuff might have even been exciting.
Right.
You know, and probably inconceivable that his grandson would be raising such a fuss about lines that were modernized
right
in 2015. I mean, he's not here to give his opinion, but what I knew of the man, I bet that's a pretty accurate description of what he would have thought.
So, you know, in 1930, when the first set of transmission lines went through, you don't think that people were upset by the fact that, you know, these lines were coming through carrying power and not to the local community?
I don't believe that they were upset. Of course, I wasn't around then. I only hear from what people have said that you talk to. It's probably a little of this and a little of that.
Mm. Remember, this is the 1930s. Most of America is out of work.
Exactly.
They're grateful for infrastructure projects. They're grateful for business and commerce. I mean, after the 1920s stock market crash, people were desperate to get back on their feet again.
Sure.
And I'm sure that if there were a handful of people that thought this was a terrible idea or going through their favorite cow pasture or orchard, they wouldn't have even thought to challenge authorities in those days. We just had faith in our leaders in a way we do not anymore.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Absolutely.
True enough.
I mean, they didn't think about what we think of today of, is that going to bother my looking over the porch and seeing power lines instead of seeing the mountains?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they were even thinking that like that back then.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference in the farm, again, between my grandfather and today is my grandfather, like a lot of other farms, had apples, a little bit of dairy, small-scale dairy, small grains, commodity crops. Somebody came to the farm, picked up the product, and it went to New York City and fed somebody.
Mm-hmm.
His grandson, me, today, the thing that attracts people to my farm is that it looks like a farm, or looks like something that doesn't exist in many landscapes anymore.
And many farms don't.
And making money off of the way a farm looks would have been crazy to a generation of farmers that, I mean, again, every farm had its bottle dumps and trash heaps and piles of old machinery.
And that's where I come in.
Mm-hmm. Which are treasure troves for you.
They are today. You don't find things like that. Milk bottles from long-lost dairies. It's not there anymore.
I think the other thing to talk about in this context, there's an interesting full circle that's happening in regards to your question about where electricity comes from. If you follow the line from its origins, where even if electricity wasn't made on the farm, you still even had local small-scale hydroelectric plants like the one Joe told us about at Bingham's Mill, and then it becomes highly nationalized from a few large sources in the 40s, 50s, 60s. But what's interesting is that if you talk to engineers today, the future may be going back to something like what my grandfather had with his powerhouse. The idea that Tesla is unveiling, even last week, a new battery that can charge all of the excess solar energy in a particular residence, so that when the sun goes down at night, you're feeding back off that battery. This idea that transmission started at the home, moved away from the home, and is coming back to the home, I think is something that my grandfather's generation would find really interesting.
Well, it's certainly the way it needs to go. And, you know, NYSERDA has a program for people who want to install, you know, solar panels or, well, wind turbines isn't really a great option in most places around here.
Wind's tough in Columbia County. Yeah. Got to go down to Long Island.
Definitely.
But, yeah. You know, Germany is way ahead of the United States in solar production and usage, and they are a far darker country in terms of its sunlight output. It's far more northern latitude. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they make a go of it.
They have good wind farms, too. Back in 2007, I was driving back from Trier to Frankfurt and going through the Moselle River Valley, you know, on the mountaintops. They all had tons of windmills.
So maybe that's how
I think they look nice myself.
That's just what I was getting at. You know, if my grandfather could look at a transmission line in the 1930s and see that's progress, maybe that's how our modern 2015 eyes are when we see windmills going up along ridgelines, solar rooftops, and things like that.
I'm not sure about that. I wish it were true. But it's a nice thought.
But Europe has its windmills all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, really, they don't have as much resistance to this idea as I think even we do here in America, because it empowers the local villages to install their own power. It lets residences generate their own power, and it's renewable. You know, that's the other wrinkle of this. There was no environmental consciousness, I'm sure, in the 1930s.
Yeah, certainly not as much. Anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to?
I'd like you to give a pitch from the Livingston History Barn.
Oh!
So Joe keeps the Livingston History Barn open to the public, and what are the hours on that, Joe?
Right now they're only open on Saturday from 10 to about 1, or if you can catch me at home, which I have my number on the door at the barn, that you can call me and I'll open it up at any time except for midnight.
And where do folks find
within
the
reason
barn?
It's right behind the Livingston Town Hall.
So that's County Route 19 in the village of Livingston.
Okay, well, Will, Joe, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Community Power is produced for Wave Farms, WGXC 90.7 FM in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Hey ho, makes you feel so funny when you're walking through town and you got no money. Hey ho, makes you feel so free standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey ho, well you feel so down picking up windfalls crawling on the ground. Hey ho, makes you feel so free standing in the top of an apple tree. Hey-ho, well, you lose your mind if you sing this song about 100 times. Hey-ho, makes you feel so free standing in the top of an apple tree.